This is far and away the most lethal, toxic, biologic agent ever injected into a human body in American history, and it's going strong.
That is Dr. Peter McCullough. Dr. McCullough is an internist, cardiologist, epidemiologist, and professor of medicine at Texas A&M College of Medicine. He maintains ABIM certification in internal medicine and cardiovascular diseases. Now, he practices both internal medicine, including the management of common infectious diseases, as well as the cardiovascular complications of both the viral infection and the injuries developing after the COVID-19 vaccine. Since the outset of the pandemic, Dr. McCullough has been a leader in the medical response to the COVID-19 disaster and has published Pathophysiological Basis and Rationale for Early Outpatient Treatment of the SARS-CoV-2, the so-called COVID-19 infection. The first synthesis of sequenced multi-drug treatment of ambulatory patients infected with SARS-CoV-2 in the American Journal of Medicine, and subsequently updated in Reviews in Cardiovascular Medicine. He has 46 peer-reviewed publications on the infection and has commented extensively on the medical response to the COVID-19 crisis in The Hill and on the Fox News Channel. Just saw him recently on Laura Ingraham. On November 19th, 2020, Dr. McCullough testified in the U.S. Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs, and throughout 2021 in the Texas Senate Committee on Health and Human Services, Colorado General Assembly, and New Hampshire Senate concerning many aspects of the pandemic response. Dr. McCullough has had one full year of dedicated academic and clinical efforts in combating the SARS-CoV-2 virus, and in doing so has reviewed thousands of reports. He's participated in scientific congresses, group discussions, press releases, and has been considered among the world's top experts on COVID-19. Dr. Peter McCullough joins us now. Dr. McCullough, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, Stu.
Of course. So you made that statement. Originally, you were a proponent of this vaccine. You started then seeing adverse reactions, adverse events from patients that were inoculated. And now since you have come out adamantly against this thing, what did you see in these patients that changed your mind?
Well, like most physicians looking at the data coming out of the registrational trials, the products looked like they were effective, 90% vaccine efficacy, even though the rates were very low, less than 1%. COVID attack rates in placebo and control. So that was a bit unusual. We had such a lot of COVID last fall to have such low event rates, but they must have recruited very well patients to the trial, which they did. The reactions in the arm were significant, but there weren't really any major systemic effects. So through December, January, February, probably 70% of my patients here at Baylor here in Dallas received the COVID-19 vaccine. Now, you know, I didn't order it. Doctors don't prescribe it. Patients volunteer for the vaccine program. It's completely voluntary. They receive the vaccine. But looking backwards now, and January 22nd, we had actually already had 186 deaths that have occurred after the vaccine. The threshold of concern is about 150 or so. In general, we get about 150 for all the vaccines combined, about 500 million shots per year across 70 vaccines. But so for a single vaccine, at that time of only 27 million people getting the vaccine, 150 deaths, that should have been an alarm signal. And I think if we had a day safety monitoring board, I think they would have shut down the program in February of 2021.
25 people died during the swine flu vaccine program. They shut it down immediately. 25 people. Now you're talking about 180 some odd deaths at one location. The CDC is now acknowledging over 12,000 deaths. For perspective, that's three times the amount of people that perished in 9/11. We've discussed, you know, things like Pearl Harbor. You know, I mean, there's a lot of comparisons. Some of the most deadly days or events in our world's history, specifically here in the United States, are minuscule in comparison to these deaths. I just don't understand. So how did you come to the conclusion that these deaths or the conditions of these inoculated patients was actually related to the injections?
Initially, we didn't know. As these deaths continued to mount, on two occasions in March and then later on in June, the CDC put on their website that CDC and FDA reviewers had looked at the deaths and none of them were related to the vaccine. And so doctors in my circles were questioning this because patients were immediately dying after the vaccine in the vaccine centers, or then shortly thereafter, we'd be called about some type of fatal event that's happened, whether it's at home or patients come to the hospital with some type of fatal event. And so two important analyses came forward, one by McLachlan from London, and then one by Rose from Israel, using the VAERS data. And they basically concluded this, that 50% of the deaths occur within 48 hours of injection, and 80% of deaths occur within a week, that 86% of the deaths have no other explanation. They're well enough to walk into an ambulatory center and actually have the COVID-19 vaccine, and within 2 days, they've died. So it's my judgment, and I've done a lot of work on data safety monitoring boards and clinical review boards. It's my judgment at this point in time that, in fact, the vaccine is the cause of death in the majority of cases.
So you mentioned numbers within a day and then within a few days. Is that going to be it? I mean, or are you thinking that we're going to see deaths that are staggered, whereas people who were inoculated, say, today may have complications 12, 18, 24 months from now? How do these things work?
Well, there's tenets of causality. It's called the Hill's tenets of causality. And that means, how do we assess anything is really related to, let's say, the administration of a vaccine? Well, the first would be the temporal relationship. So I told you, in time, it's really closely related to the injection. The biologic plausibility. We know the vaccines cause the production of the dangerous spike protein, which itself can be damaging to organs and be fatal. So we know the mechanism of action. If we have an exaggerated response or uptake of the viral genetic products into the human body, that in fact the spike protein can be lethal. So the biologic plausibility is there. But the proposition now of coming in for a vaccine, or even being pressured or forced or coerced into a vaccine, which for some people it looks like it will be fatal, is an agonizing situation. I've never seen it in my career.
Wow. So we've talked to several vaccine injured victims. One of them was Brittany Galvin. She's been diagnosed with Guillain-Barré. We have people that have tremors, unexplainable tremors, people who are paralyzed. I'm inundated with emails. It's crazy. The symptoms and injuries that we're seeing seem to so widely vary. So are we going to see more and more of these anomalies, more weird, for a lack of better words, reactions? Or is there a way to kind of categorize what to expect?
In the analysis by Rose and colleagues, which was published in the American Journal of Public Health Science, Policy and Law, Rose analyzed this, and it looks like the non-fatal events that are reported in VAERS go along four major organ systems. One is the brain, one is the heart, then the immune system, and the hematologic system. It appears my analysis of this is that, for instance, the cardiac myocarditis, which now there's an official FDA warning on this, that appears to be relatively immediate in the data that the CDC and NIH reviewed and FDA reviewed. It was in about 2 days of the second shot. It really blossoms. And I've seen these cases in my clinic, and they're frightening. The CDC now has certified 2,000 of these cases. They tend to hit younger individuals, men more than women, associated with chest pain, elevations in troponin, EKG changes, reductions in heart pumping function seen by echocardiography. And we have to use heart failure medications, have patients have no physical activity, and then try to prevent the development of heart failure and cardiac death. There's already been a case that went all the way to complete heart failure transplantation and then died afterwards. That's in the VAERS system. So the cardiac appears to be relatively immediate. What I'm worried about is I've never seen myocarditis cases where the cardiac troponin stays markedly elevated for weeks, for a month. You know, I have a case where we're going into our second month now. I'm becoming very worried that the messenger RNA or the adenoviral DNA is taken up and it's not disposed of, and that the spike protein is continuing to be produced locally in the tissues and causing damage. Senator Johnson held the first vaccine injury program press briefing, and I was amazed at what the late onset and the emergence of the neurologic syndromes that you mentioned. And it really depends. We know that lipid nanoparticles now are taken up into the brain. The messenger RNA and adenoviral DNA is taken up into the brain. And it probably depends on how much and where the seeding occurs. Not every cell can take up this material, but there must be a mosaic of cells. And so I have a patient in my practice who has a prominent cerebellar syndrome, the base of the heart, where she has imbalance, and also has tremendous memory loss, tremor. She is absolutely not right, Stu. And I can tell you, I had her 10 years in my practice and she was perfectly normal. She took the vaccine and within about a month, and now it's progressing for the next 3 months, she has this horrific neurologic syndrome.
So you're talking, when you say perfectly normal, you're talking about no underlying, pre-existing neurological conditions. I mean, she was a healthy individual, no autoimmune deficiencies, nothing like this.
She's completely healthy, in her 70s. She had a background atrial fibrillation, which we used an atrial fibrillation ablation. She's in sinus rhythm. She's been in sinus rhythm for years. She's perfectly managed in her 70s. And now she's neurologically devastated after the vaccine.
And we're seeing a lot of younger people that are being affected by this as well. And when people seek medical attention for these symptoms, they go to the doctor. They can hardly get there, emergency room, whatever it is. They're getting normal lab values. In other words, their tests are, quote, normal. But they're sitting there gasping for air with serious symptoms. They're telling us that their doctors are baffled. And when their doctors try to use, standard care treatments, nothing seems to be working. So why would their tests come back normal? Could it be that this is because this is happening on the genetic level? I mean, what do doctors do?
Our interpretation of this, doctors in my circles, interpretation of this is that the messenger RNA or adenoviral DNA is taken up into cells. The spike protein is produced in the cells. It's expressed on the cell surface, and then the body now is attacking its own cells. The spike protein that circulates in the blood, after a few weeks, that's actually mopped up by the circulating antibodies, which are supposed to be there. So Ogata and colleagues from Harvard published a paper showing after the first injection of messenger RNA, there's circulating spike protein. After the second injection, the antibodies raise up in the bloodstream and damp down the spike protein. But the local production of spike protein is what we're concerned about, causing these neuro, cardiac, immune, and hematologic syndromes. So we have some laboratory hints. Dr. Charles Hoffe in Canada has presented on this. The D-dimer test, which is a sensitive test of blood clotting, which is elevated in SARS-CoV-2 infection, appears to be elevated in those patients with these vaccine injuries. He's reporting 50 to 60% rates of elevation of D-dimer. We know that the imaging right now is not helping us. Getting MRI imaging or other imaging, we can't see the spike protein itself causing damage. We still can't measure the spike protein in blood. There's no clinical test to do that. But importantly, we do imaging, and it's important because we have to rule out blood clots. And we know the FDA has warnings on J&J, for instance, for blood clots in the brain. There are analyses showing the blood clots are even to a greater extent with Pfizer and Moderna. They can occur throughout the body. So every patient who presents with a neurologic syndrome must have imaging, either CT or MRI imaging, mainly to rule out blood clot as an etiology of the neurologic syndrome.
Wow. Well, having you here is a real treat, obviously. I mean, you have a certain medical authority. You seem to be very fact-based, but I'd like to ask you a couple less technical questions because I'm just a lay guy here. So people who've been injected are beginning to have jab remorse. I'm getting inundated with emails asking, is there a way to reverse any of this? Is there?
We don't think so. And, I think what happens, Stu, is that so many Americans patriotically went out and they volunteered to be in the vaccine program in December, January, and February. We had a huge rush of people who did this. They were told that it was safe and effective. Nobody really asked what was in these vaccines. And then we started to see this evolve over time. So I think it's fine for people to change their view on the vaccine, and they should, based on emerging data. The CDC keeps telling us, go to vaers.com and look for yourself. Do your own research. That's what we see throughout all the CDC webpages. What we haven't had, and I think is really an act of malfeasance, is we have not had a press briefing by the sponsors of the program, which is the CDC and the FDA, to tell Americans what's going on with safety. You and I are going over the published papers on this so far about vaccine injuries. The CDC is holding all the data. They should be having at least weekly or monthly press briefings on this. They should have an event, critical event committee, day safety monitoring board, human ethics committee. There was a paper by Bruno and colleagues, worldwide paper, 57 authors, 17 countries, that basically told everybody in the world, get the safety mechanisms in place on the vaccine program or shut it down. We can't continue to do this. and blindside Americans and people all over the world on safety. We can't ask them to take a vaccine without giving fair disclosure and fair balance on safety information.
In all of your years in medicine, in and around all of this, in your highly respected career, have you ever seen, and I don't know how often you deal with this, so this could be an ignorant question, but have you ever seen a treatment, a medicine, whether it's injected or orally, you know, what ingested, whatever, have you ever seen a completely blank insert?
No, I haven't. And the mechanism of that is called the emergency use authorization. By the EUA, they're not fully approved, so there is no vetted package insert on safety information. It's called ISI, or important safety information. And what the viewer should know is that when something gets fully approved, it must be presented with fair balance. And what we see by our government agencies is they're taking advantage of the loosely written EUA legislation, which doesn't indicate that fair balance has to be presented. And so they're not presenting it. But I've chaired over two dozen data safety monitoring boards. I've with committee work, and we always work in teams, not single people, but in teams. I have been a part of major programs where we've had to shut it down because of safety. I've done this before. I've done this type of work. I've chaired data safety monitoring boards for the National Institutes of Health. In fact, I'm doing so right now. So I can tell you, as a doctor, and this is my book of business, I'm in my fourth decade of doing this. I can tell you, this program should have been shut down in February based on safety.
Can you speculate as to why?
You know, I did a program with Dr. Drew of noted television psychiatry fame. And, you know, his opinion was that America had been through this difficult year of COVID-19, all these COVID-19 mortalities, you know, over 600,000 fatalities on the books for COVID-19. That there was a psychological acceptance of this, that in fact, we were ready for the vaccines not to be safe enough and to accept these mortalities. And that, you know, that's the reason why the CDC can very casually float out a number today at 12,000 deaths and state that it's rare, that there was a psychological preparation for this. I'm not sure if it's true. I think we should hold to the same standards we always have for every single product. It's usually 5 unexplained deaths, get a black box warning, 50, it comes off the market. Maybe for a broadly used vaccine, it would be maybe 150 or 200 that comes off the market. But to race it on up to 12,000 now, where we have independent evaluations suggesting 86% is related to the vaccine, is far beyond anything that's acceptable. Stu, it's going to go down in history as the most dangerous biological medicinal product rollout in human history.
Wow. In plain terms, do you consider this injection to be poisonous?
The mechanism of action is clearly poisonous. I mean, we know generation of the spike protein itself, it damages local tissues. It's not natural for a human cell to produce this foreign spike protein. We've never asked the human body to produce a foreign protein ever in the history of mankind. So this is so radically new to do this and to do it on a mass scale. And to let alone have it expressed on the cell surface and have the body start to attack its own cells, and then let it circulate in the bloodstream, where we know it damages blood cells and causes blood clotting. So the mechanism of action in the human body is so alarmingly dangerous. If you were to draw this up on a chalkboard 2 years ago and say, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to give it a whirl, I don't think we could even get a human volunteer to sign up for this. I don't think I would ever bring it forward as a product idea, even on the drawing board.
I'm skipping through a break, allowing us 4 more minutes because I have you here. And if you have 4 more minutes, I'd like to keep you. A couple of things I want to touch on. There's this incessant push to inject our kids. Would you ever recommend this for a child?
Under no circumstances.
Doesn't sound like you'd recommend it to anybody, but I mean, just to be clear.
You know, I started downgrading my recommendations on this in March, and I was late, honestly. I was late because I just, you know, the data were coming in and there's a lag in the data reporting. But as each months have gone by, I've been progressively downgrading. I think at this point in time, I really just can't recommend it to anybody.
Would you warn against it?
Yeah, I think at this point in time, it's fair to warn against it. And it really has to do, Stu, with this issue of moral authority, meaning that if a doctor or healthcare person in a position of authority recommends that, and that person turns around and takes the injection and dies, like 12,000 Americans have done, or gets injured, like 400,000 Americans have done, there really is a moral responsibility for the person recommending that. Now, the counterpoint of that is, well, if they got COVID and they died, wouldn't you feel a moral authority there? And I say, you know, that's different, because the chances of running into COVID nowadays are less than 1% that anybody's ever going to come in contact with it. So, A, it's a very low exposure. We know that from the data. And we also know, based on the work that I've done and others, that it's imminently treatable, that we can treat COVID-19 and we can drastically reduce the chances of hospitalization and death. So if you ask me for the next patient, let's say a senior citizen, what should they do? I'd say, listen, take the risks with a natural infection right now and let's treat early. We have EUA monoclonal antibodies. They have just as good of an approval as the vaccines. We should give monoclonal antibody infusions, use the sequence drug approach that I've taught the world how to do through two major peer-reviewed publications last year, and let's take our chances. The vaccine, once it's in the body, we can't get it out, and we don't know how to manage these complications, some of which are fatal.
What about the people who have not been inoculated but are in close proximity to others? Any truth to this so-called shedding or transmission, self-spreading vaccines? Do we know what's being transmitted? Are they getting the spike proteins? Are they irreparably damaged also?
We know from papers from China that the virus itself clearly, with the spike protein, so the ball with the spike protein on it clearly gets into all the body fluids that you can imagine. We know that to be the case. And so it follows that the spike protein would get into oral and urogenital secretions, tears, even into exhaled breath. And so, in fact, shedding is likely to get some ambient spike protein may just result in something minimal, like a change in menstruation that's been reported. The only clear case of shedding that I think is really concerning is this direct transmission through breast milk, which is inferred from the VAERS vignettes of a breastfeeding woman who took the vaccine and then transmitted to the baby and killed the baby. That's kind of the inference here. So people have asked me, what do I recommend? I said, well, since we don't know about shedding and there's so much unknown, that people who take the vaccine probably ought to try to keep their distance from others. If my patients in my practice ask me this, I'd say, listen, no kissing, no sexual intercourse, no sharing spoons and things like this. Try to stay away from one another until we can get past this potential shedding period, which may be 2 to 4 weeks.
2 to 4 weeks after inoculation.
That's right.
So you don't believe that this shedding or that this transmission continues indefinitely, long-term, forever, even though the body is being told by the injection to continue producing these spike proteins?
Well, we don't know how long the spike proteins are produced. You know, if I was to take a guess at it right now, based on what I know, I'd say at least a month. It could be more. But what we do know is the antibodies against the spike protein, which is the whole purpose of taking the vaccine, are sky high. And the expectation is they would actually mop up the spike protein and not let significant amounts of it get into secretion. So if I was to speculate on the biology, I would say, listen, after the antibodies are elevated after vaccination, probably the shedding risk is reduced.
Wonderful. Dr. Peter McCullough, I really appreciate your time. It's what a wealth of information. Thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
I think the fact checkers are going to have a really tough time with that guy, Dr. Peter McCullough. What a based delivery of just objective facts over and over. And nobody more qualified to opine on this situation, our current times right now, than Dr. Peter McCullough. And we really appreciate his insight and thank him for his time and being here. IGF-1, what is that? Well, in our current times, it's probably a good thing to have a strong immune system. You have IGF-1 naturally in your body, but as we age, the production levels decrease. You have to supplement it just like you supplement anything else, whether it's vitamin D, vitamin C, your multivitamin, you're supplementing for a deficiency. Normal, natural, nothing illegal, nothing weird about this stuff. IGF-1 is naturally found in your body, and you can now supplement it by going to keys2life.shop, 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 making men, men again, rejuvenating your body, promoting lean muscle gain, promoting healthy weight loss. It's not just for men, lots of products for everybody over there, including sleep aids and everything else. It is holistic and natural. It's already in your body. This is the multi-million dollar company that was shut down, banned by the government because their products work. They keep people healthy. Well, that's taking money away from big pharma and big healthcare, big medicine. That's not going to be tolerated by these globalists. They have to get their fair take, right? or unfair, whatever it's going to be. Promote your body into a strong immune system. Go to keys2life.shop right now. Make sure that you mention Stu Peters when you go to keys2life.shop. By the way, the special is back. If you put any product on AutoShip, including the cheapest product on their website, you will then in turn get any product, including up to their most expensive product, absolutely free. Put the cheapest product on AutoShip, get the most expensive product absolutely free. Can't deny that that's a great deal. Go to keys2life.shop right now. Make sure that you tell them that Stu Peters sent you. Clay Clark is up next. Stick around.